Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
This is June 23rd, 2021, and this is episode 212 of Transmission.
A lot of twos.
Yeah, this is part two.
A lot of twos. Part two, 212.
Before starting this, I did the number two. Too much information. That's another two.
Way too much information.
We've got two comments. Good morning from CK and Kathleen. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. So Mark and I were discussing how we're officially old before we got going. And the way that I learned this the other day, this was very odd to me, was that I was talking to my niece, who's like 23 years old, about, and I mentioned Sinead O'Connor, who to me is like a modern pop star, right? Mm. And pretty famous, you know,
there's an iconic,
not like some random basement grunge band from the 70s or something, but
it's not like, you know, we're not talking about like Hoobastank or some kind of crap band like that. We're talking right. about.
Yeah. Yeah. And she'd never heard of her. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm so old.
That just goes to show you, though, going to a good college does not mean you get a good education.
That's right. That's right. So.
Yeah.
And, yep, Gus is weighing in on climate change in Oregon.
Good morning, friends. Hope everyone is finding ways to stay cool if your part of the planet is having August temps in June like mine is. Yeah, getting going to be hot here. And you know, it's been cool here in Minnesota the last couple of days, but today it's going to get up to 90.
Yeah, it's going to get brutal again. So this is what we're talking about is climate change. And before we get on, we kind of ran through a whole gambit of things that we could be talking about, because since climate's pretty basic to our lives, this really is affecting everything. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we settled on to talk a little bit about is, because I think it connects to a lot of the socio-political things we've talked about, certainly connects to a lot of the publicity and conversation around the pandemic, is the fact that climate change is going to pose a tremendous threat to the nation state as an entity.
Or at least the current iterations of it.
Yeah, current iterations of the nation state. And because you know, when your area, your environment becomes uninhabitable, people are on the move. People are on the move. And, you know, this has been talked about, right? But I think as with most things related to climate change, we're not really dealing with the reality and the implications.
Dear God,
And one great little example of this that I just read yesterday. So Colorado, like most of the Western states, is baking. They're having this massive heat wave. And this journalist just did a little analysis of the articles that have appeared in Colorado newspapers over the last just like week or so, or maybe to 2 weeks, about the heat wave. And what he found was that only 4% of the articles mentioned climate change. So in other words, 96% of the articles did not talk at all about why there is a heat wave. They just talked about, you know, the ramifications, right? You know, the melting sidewalks, the you can't take your dog for a walk, you know, all that kind of stuff. But only 4% of the articles talked about climate change, right? So this is a very conscious effort to continue in denial, right? And you know, and when I was in Guatemala a few years ago teaching, it was very obvious to me that that environment there, it just, it's becoming unsustainable for the number of people who live there. And everywhere you went, you know, you saw these plumes of smoke in the distance, which were basically people slashing and burning what little is left of the forest. The amount of garbage that was everywhere was just unbelievable to me. And, you know, you've got these people that were growing these tiny little plots of corn that were like no bigger than Shetty, you know, and that's what a family is supposed to get by on. You know,
this is Shetty, by the way.
Which is just impossible. And so, you know, so what's going to happen is those people are going to hit the road. I mean, you know, you just get to a point where you don't have any choice. And nation states, which is a very modern invention, depend on these hard borders, which again is one of these constructs that we just take for granted, like as if that's always existed. Which of course is not true at all, you know. When you have thousands of people on the move, those borders, as we've certainly been hearing a lot about the last number of years, are going to be under stress.
And this this shows, you know, just to kind of beat this drum again, this shows the complexity of our system. And I just want to kind of connect some dots, because I think people, when you start talking about climate change, the reason people don't like talking about it is because you have no idea what to do, because we want to collapse back into individual human action. And it's like, it's too big to think about that way. Because it's not just like pollution. Climate change isn't just pollution. Like, oh, we need to like make less junk so that it's less polluted. Like, that's how people want to think about it. Like, so you connect the dots. Okay. Our whole system is built upon interrelationships of a global economy. So when one stock market crashes, it causes a ripple. And so we've seen that with things that don't really have to do anything with catastrophes, like a stock, you know, goes short or something, like causes problems. Well, what happens when
GameStop.
What happens when whole regions have drought because of climate change? And so there's an agricultural crisis. And those people can't have enough to eat. Or like, what happens if Los Angeles doesn't have water? Okay. And where do those people go? And our current system is set up in such a way that it's adversarial towards migration, right? So like, okay, now then we're bumping against an improper system to deal with these things. And so we have a crisis. And so right now what we do in our society with an increased need for migration is to shift rightward. So this is part of where fascism, right? Like, I know it's not Friday. I'm sorry, everybody. Can't turn to fascism anyway. When nation states, like when your sense of national identity around a certain sort of sets of like white supremacist values is under threat, like, let's be clear, like people are like, why are you afraid of, you know, the browning of America? Well, if your whole identity of America is based on white principles, that is a threat. Mm-hmm. And so then you go fascist, you go ultra-nationalist, you defend your borders and you become increasingly militaristic, and it creates... that creates ripples in how you relate to other nations. And then currencies, like all this stuff starts spiraling, and you have improper responses. Like when you have, so it's not a coincidence that the United States had a improper response to the pandemic under Trump, because fascists are not going to be thinking about how to care for the population the same way. And so then it's like this, you get this ripple effect of all sorts of things. And this is going to intensify and get scarier until we have new ways of thinking about how to relate to each other in systems that are healthier for the planet and each other.
Well, and one great example of this, and I did not fact check this to see if this quote was actually real, but the content is real. So there was this economist that said, you know, I'm anti-bicycle riding because bike riding destroys the economy. He said, for every McDonald's, you create 10 or 20 jobs for servers. People get more unhealthy. You create 10 physician jobs. You create 10 nutritionist jobs. You create a whole raft of jobs that do not exist if people ride bicycles and don't eat at McDonald's, right? And so, so what that shows perfectly, right, is that the system is predicated on economic activity that is going to promote climate change, right? So, eating excess
meat, lack of health,
and lack of health, and all these things. And so this is the weird, you know, trap that we've gotten ourselves into, right? And, you know, we see this playing out around Line 3 in northern Minnesota, right? So for those of you who are not aware, Enbridge Energy, which is a Canadian company, a pipeline company, is building a new pipeline, oil pipeline across northern Minnesota. And it's, you know, going through tribal lands and all of this. And of course, Enbridge Energy, their, you know, pipelines leak, and they had a massive disaster in Michigan. They spilled hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil into the Kalamazoo River. And the area that it's going through in northern Minnesota is the watershed for the Mississippi and for the wild rice production and all this kind of stuff. And the oil that is going through these pipelines, because it's this Canadian company, is the tar sands oil, which is the absolute worst, most polluting, most greenhouse gas emitting way of mining oil, right? And you know, all across Minnesota, county after county has voted for this pipeline. And what's the rationale? Well, you know, it makes jobs, right? It makes jobs. And so this short-term, you know, thinking and this addiction to this particular economic system and reality, then you combine that with the fact that you've got a heat wave and 96% of your articles don't even try to inform the public as to why this is going on. And then suddenly, you know, 50,000 Central Americans show up at your southern border, and the response is not, oh, I know what's going on, we need a new system. The response is, build the wall.
They're dirty and they're murderers and they're rapists.
Yeah, right.
Well, and the thing about, like, this is where it's bizarre. Like, this is normalized. Part of what empires do is they create myths that normalize bad shit. Okay, so like, we think about jobs, like, we'll need to have jobs. Otherwise, you can't pay for food and housing. I'm like, where does food and housing come from? Right. If a society has enough to feed and house everyone already, you don't need to create jobs that are destructive in order to feed and house everyone. You just have to find a better way to feed and house everyone and make sure everyone has things that they can do to contribute to the good of society. That's what an economy is supposed to be. But we have this warped understanding, like, that we legitimize and normalize, like, well, we got to pull oil out of the ground and pollute the shit out of everything. Why? Why? Why does it need to be McDonald's?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing that the human race made it this far, because for tens of thousands of years, no Paleolithic people had a job.
I know.
And yet they got fed somehow. Yeah. It must have been the aliens. It must have fed them.
It's like this. We don't like the idea of currency is relatively modern. I mean, there's been exchanges and stuff, but it's not like there's been currency for 10,000 years or anything. Or the idea of division of labor, the idea of employment in exchange for currency so that you can go buy that. Like, these are constructs. Yeah. And this does have to do with climate, because like, what happens is a system of threats becomes fascistic. And, you know, like, we've talked about Handmaid's Tale, and it's fiction, but it's what happens. Like, so all of a sudden you have a powerful militaristic group seizing control of the most useful, valuable land, and then start trying to use strict policies in order to advance their agenda and population and then exclude other people. So like, this is, I mean, eco-fascism is the wave of the future. It's where it's going to go. You're going to have increased, you're going to have water wars, which I think Maria maybe brought up yesterday. I can't remember. Think about, and you mentioned wild rice. Like, wild rice is a traditional indigenous crop in Minnesota, but the number one producer of wild rice is California, which is not like a water abundant state. Like, there's agriculture in California is huge that relies on all these systems that if you have a bad enough drought, collapse. And so then all of a sudden a major agricultural source of things that people eat every day goes away. And it causes a ripple effect. Again, we're not thinking long term at all.
All right. Bunch of comments.
Okay. So CK writes, as a parent, I am concerned with what my children will be able to do in the next 10 years, occupation wise and environmentally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's scary.
No.
I mean, the first Earth Day happened, what, 50 years ago? The first Earth Day?
Something like that.
I mean, we've been talking about the same thing for 50 years, and we haven't really moved the ball in the right direction.
Oh, no. No, we've been moving steadily backwards.
This Green New Deal that people are talking about is wow, they were talking about the same things 50 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm really terrified about what happens when my son is my age. I don't know what kind of world that's going to be. Ellen writes, good morning. Avi, who's 5, says, hi, Mark and Dan.
Hey, hi. Avi.
Hi, Avi. I heard you had your 5th birthday fairly recently.
That's right. Happy birthday.
CK writes, forced migration is going to be a huge problem. So he also writes, I feel like this is a B-movie script we are living. Yeah, it's not an entertaining movie. but there are some really bad actors in it. CK writes, when talking about borders, especially the United States, if we had to hazard a guess, I think we could say that in the next 5 to 15 years, we will see an uptick in law enforcement. That's not even really a guess at that point.
That's not even super prophetic, CK. Come on.
Love, anarchy, revolution, seize the means of production. You're on a roll, CK. I'm for all those things. I'm for love, anarchy, revolution, and seizing the means of production. Hopefully all together. Gus writes, Cory Doctorow argues that climate change has created all kinds of jobs that actually need to be done. With global sea change, we are going to need every coastal city moved inland by at least a chunk, etc. We have already created an entire generation's worth of work. I think he's right.
Mm-hmm. There's going to be plenty of stuff to do that needs doing, and I think the question is, what is the attitude, right? What is the attitude with which it is done? And I think that, when we look historically at things like various contemplative movements, various labor movements, so I'm going off of CK's love, anarchy, and revolution. I mean, if we look at these various movements, and this is the interesting connection theologically for me, right? So theologically, Christianity asserts that there is this massive abundance, right? That God is incredibly abundant. And one of the reasons that it's so hard to make a living farming in a capitalist economy is that the earth is so abundant that you grow way more than what you can charge a decent price for. And I know this because I've done it. And, there were always too many vegetables. Like, that's why the price kept going down, right? Because there was just so much stuff. And so the issue, though, is that if you're over consuming, right, that's where the problem comes in. And Stephanie kind of gets to this with her comment here. We go to that.
We need to live tribal. No homeless, no hunger, lots of love.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that, and sometimes I look at some of these statistics from a personal basis because, and this is the paradox. We keep talking about how the individual can't fix these systemic things, which is true. And we can look at the individual actions and the sum of those and sort of the spirit that that creates. And one of the things that I often, you know, look at, and I look at it over and over again because I kind of can't believe this, is the average water usage of somebody in America. So if you look at the average water usage of an American, it's something like 150 gallons of water a day. I mean, it is a huge amount of water. And I keep, you know, over the years, like I keep checking our water bill and we use like 20 gallons of water a day on average per person. And I keep thinking like I'm not, you know, living like some Bedouin out in the Sahara Desert. I mean, I feel like I'm sort of living a normally watered, hydrated life. Yet the amount of water that I use is about 1/7 what the American average is. And so there truly is this abundance that that we can tap into if we are willing to live differently. And that's the key. And that's to me where some of this educational piece comes in. That was the point of this journalist that was writing this article about Colorado, is that if people are not educated about this, if people are not made aware about this, there's no way they're going to support sane policy change. Right? They're just going to want to keep doing what they're doing and just go, oh, well, it's a bummer that it's hot. I'll just get my dog some booties and I'll be good to go.
And we found out, we were joked about a treadmill for dogs yesterday. And they have them.
They already exist.
So there's my yet another one of my ideas that's been taken from me by someone who got to it
first. By Amazon.
This one's gonna be. This is an interesting comment. Yeah. Lynn writes: Bill Gates owns more farmland in the United States than ever anyone. Now this is.
Yeah. This we've is actually where, mentioned this. Yeah, I've mentioned this
let's
before.
Just,
yeah.
Let's just unpack this a little bit. This is capitalism in a nutshell. So he has a book about climate change. Bill Gates has a book about climate change. He owns more farmland in the United States than anyone. And one of the biggest things that he provides is for McDonald's, right?
Yep. Yep.
Meanwhile, if you criticize him, until recently, now that he's getting divorced, somehow the morality of divorce makes it open for him to be criticized. Fucked up. But meanwhile, like, anytime I've criticized Bill Gates in the past, I get jumped on by liberal people who think he's a saint because of he's trying to fight malaria. So here we have this ultra billionaire, one of the wealthiest people on earth, who's wealthier than many nations, who is directly contributing to climate change and profiting off of it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he does a little philanthropy on the side. Maybe it's big, but it's not big to him considering his overall net worth. And so he becomes sacrosanct and writes a book about climate change, making a profit off of that. And that book is probably sold via Amazon, which is owned by even a richer person in the world.
That's right.
And so you get the system. This is capitalism.
And what's interesting is that a huge percentage of that farmland is in the South. And so the people that are farming that, this is basically the inheritance of slavery, right? So it's the same land that was farmed by slaves, then was farmed by sharecroppers, then was farmed by basically indentured servants, and now is farmed by Bill Gates's servants. And so it's the same system, right? That's gone through these different iterations, and at each stage, the system is deemed socially acceptable, right? I mean, slavery was socially acceptable, indentured servitude was socially acceptable, sharecropping, et cetera, et cetera. And yet it really continues to create the same dehumanized sort of environment in which the bottom line has to be not, you know, are these people getting fed and housed decently, but it has to be, are the shareholders making a profit?
Here's a comment from from Ellen, Behind the Bastards. Is that like a podcast?
That must be a podcast.
Yeah. What a great name. Just did a two-parter on Bill Gates. I recommend that. You know, it's not because I think this is the thing. I don't think it's because Bill Gates is a uniquely evil person. Like, this is, again, it's systemic. And so the question is, how do we think about this and respond to this systemically? Have an imagination that things can be different. Like, that's where it starts. A lot of people think this is all normal.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, taking what we started with, this migration thing, right? Yeah. What is one of the most evil constructs according to the US right? Well, the world order, right? We hear about this all the time. You know, these people in the black vans, you know, the secret cabal of the world, right? And for most Americans, and really I would say for a huge number of people around the world, the nation state is like an idol, right? This is the most important thing. I mean, you know, leave aside the fact that most of the nations in the world were created by European colonialists and did not ever exist, right? They arbitrarily divided up Africa. They arbitrarily divided up South Asia. They arbitrarily divided up South America. I mean, these places did not exist as countries. But now people are brainwashed into, oh, you know, I'm an American, I'm an Argentinian, I'm a Nigerian, I'm a this, that, or the other thing. And that is one of the greatest obstacles to coming up with a systemic solution for some of this, because people are going to be moving around. I mean, they're going to be, whether we like it or not. And so, yeah, either we can respond to that violently with more oppression, we could say, all right, well, you know, we've got to figure out how to accommodate folks and take care of them.
You know, the other thing is, like, we wouldn't have to have people move around if we used distribution systems in a sane way. And isn't the right word. So, like, in an ethical way.
In a humane way.
In a humane way. Because, like, right now, like, this is the thing. This is all geared around profit, not the common good. So, like, Dan was talking about, like, it's like, oh my God, I have all these tomatoes. I'm not getting enough money for tomatoes. Like, and so, like, what happens is they just dump that shit. Like, this happens all the time. Like, they just dump it because, like, well, we're not going to make a profit off of it. And yes, if we had a distribution system if our whole point of raising food was to feed people, we could do that. But it's not the point. Right. It's to sell it to people for as much as possible.
Yeah. Well, or the other thing that happens is, so the price of tomatoes is so low, so you can't have 1,000 small farmers growing tomatoes. So what do you have to do? You got to kick all those people off the land. You got to make one big giant ass tomato farm, you know, that is farmed by robotic tractors and owned by one person. And so then that one person can make a profit. Well, where the hell do those 1,000 families go?
They get to die, because if you're not a productive member of society, you don't deserve to live.
That's right.
And if you get homeless, we're going to put spikes in places where you'd normally want to sleep. And if you decide to go into a park, which is public property, then after a while, the cops will come and trash everything when you're gone. That's what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm getting depressed. Gus had a quick comment about Gates uses his philanthropy, quote unquote, to chip away at public education in Washington State. He's trash. Mary writes,
"I really feel good." Yeah.
This is fascinating. Mary writes, "Data gathered by the Land Report and NBC News showed that their land holdings range from 70,000 acres in North Louisiana, where their farmland grows soybeans, corn, cotton, and rice, to 20,000 acres in Nebraska, where farmers grow soybeans. They bought and later sold an additional 6,000 acres in Georgia." NBC News found, in Washington, the Gateses own more than 14,000 acres of farmland that includes potato fields so massive that they are visible from space, and some of which are processed into And I think it's going to go on to say French fries. And just a reminder, comments over a certain length, I don't know what the magic number is, get cut off. But I can see where you're going. Like, this is bizarre. Potato
fields from space.
And I just to connect the dots to like, okay, so when I was taking care of my mother as she was dying, this is really depressing. I had a temp job sweeping a, like, I don't know, 20,000, 30,000 square foot freezer, cold storage facility that held only McDonald's French fries. And so it distributed those French fries to the regional McDonald's, the franchises. And so, like, you get see this whole thing. So you get this weird, this like, the economy's built around this, so that you get a guy who, like, should be taking care of his mom because she's dying, having to sweep a giant freezer with just McDonald's French fries, which, let's just be honest, McDonald's French fries haven't benefited any human being in the history of the world. That's not the best way to eat potatoes for nutrition. They're tasty, though. I mean, I'll say that. CK writes, if you look at the problems in the UK with distribution, especially between England and Ireland and Northern Ireland, it's a clusterfuck.
Right.
I mean, the potato famine is another example of, like, we're going to see that. And, like, even that narrative, like, it's clear that that was not caused by a potato famine. It was caused by rich English landowners saying, F you, Irish people. You can suffer and die.
Yeah.
And so that's what caused that migration.
The Ireland, Northern Ireland border is a perfect microcosm of this, right? So those of you that have been following Brexit, which is like my favorite hilarious political nightmare, right? Know that one of the biggest sticking points with Brexit was the Irish border because, so you've got this tiny island that's divided in two, because of colonialism, right? And, you know, there was war, civil war over this for decades, right? The Troubles. And part of the resolution of the Troubles was that the border would be an open border, right? And there would be a free flow of goods and people across the Irish border. Well, now Brexit comes along and says, well, now there's got to be a hard border. Between Northern Ireland and Ireland. Well, you can't have a hard border and an open border at the same time. And so now you've got all these genius politicians that are trying to figure out, and it's hilarious. They're like, okay, well, we'll sort of hide the customs office behind a big bush down the road, and the truck will kind of pull over and just get checked really quick. And that won't be a real border. You know, and then they're like, well, maybe we'll check stuff as it comes across on the ocean. And then the people in Northern Ireland are like, so you're kicking us out of England, you know, and they're freaking out. And it's just, I mean, it's really sad. And it's this entire construct of, you know, and again, you talk about a view from space. There's no border on the island of Ireland. And yet here's this construct that is literally causing war, famine, making people's lives impossible. And again, the powers that be are not helping. I mean, they're helping to reinforce that construct. So one of the things that we can start doing for ourselves, you know, again, this is the Dan and Mark, your downers, what can we do? Well, one of the things to do is to start examining these constructs and start going like, well, why am I addicted to this weird mythical line that runs along the 45th parallel? You know, why am I addicted to this fake line? You know, the people on the other side, you know, they're the same as me. Like, what is that, right? And freeing our minds is the only way to begin to really free up these systems.
I guess Gus gets the final word about, because I made that comment about French fries not helping anybody, and you said, well, they benefited Ray Kroc. Speaking of which, there's all these Kroc centers and stuff, like philanthropy there too.
That's just a Kroc.
Yeah, Kroc is something.
All right.
Well, looks
thanks,
like
we're everybody.
Almost ending on time-ish today, so that's good.
Yeah, only 5 minutes over.
We talked enough about that. I don't know what we're going to do on Friday. We'll figure out. Maybe it'll be fun Friday or Fabulous Friday, or I don't know.
Yeah. Thank God it's Friday.
Yeah.
All right. Go look up Sinead O'Connor if you've never heard of her. Yeah. All right. We'll see you later.